We have the Reds on the radio for you tonight. It'll be game two of their doubleheader in Milwaukee. As we know, the protests from the Milwaukee professional team started everything yesterday afternoon. The Bucks determining they were not going to play game five in their NBA playoff series after what happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The Brewers, right after we got off the air with you last night, shortly followed suit, and the Reds agreed that they would stand in unison and stand together as the professional sporting world last night. Those who could did shut down MLS, only had one game that was playing. It started a little bit before everything went on. Baseball had a handful of games that were boycotted, protested, not played, the WNBA as well. And so the Reds will be playing a doubleheader today, as are a handful of teams trying to make up for the lost time yesterday. The NBA is not playing tonight, but there have been talks and everything else going on that the NBA will decide to resume the playoffs. And I haven't been on Twitter enough to get all the up-to-the-minute on this. I don't know what the schedule is moving forward. I do know they are not playing tonight. The WNBA is also not playing tonight as well. So, as news breaks, we'll try to keep up with it. Hard to do a little of both, but we try our best, and that's all we can ask for. If you want more on the forecast, simple. Go to WGCLradio.com. If you want to see our high school football calendar, fingers crossed we can get through it. It's week by week. We'll be at South on September 4th. They will host Terre Haute North. Fingers crossed that this all goes according to Hoyle, and we'll keep you up to date with everything that's going on. Every Thursday, we head to the which format is it? We're at Skyping with Zach Osterman. He is the beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers at the Indianapolis Star, IndyStar.com. My man, how are you today?
Uh-oh. Can't get my microphone to unmute. There we go.
There we go.
How we doing?
Click away, buddy. We'll get it working one way or another. I'm trying to think when we talked last Thursday. It was super busy, and I can't remember why. Was that all the blowback from the Big Ten about we finally got some reasons why the season was going to be canceled or not picked up at any? Was that last Thursday? I'm trying to keep everything straight here.
That sounds about right. The Big Ten's open letter.
The Big Ten's open letter. Kind of wondering why we did that on Thursday when we could have done it earlier. And done. Anyhow, a week later, here we are. And one of the other top headlines, I'm looking just at ESPN.com trying to get caught up today. Nebraska Huskers players sue Big Ten over postponement. Well, there's never a dull moment in Lincoln. What's in the water out there?
Yeah. Yeah, I think
I know you don't speak for Nebraska. I'm just from the angle of we're just not taking no for an answer. Is that where we're going?
To some extent, at least. And I think, you know, it this entire process has also certainly been predictably changed by the fact that we haven't seen the Big 12, the SEC, or the ACC follow suit, at least not yet. You know, I mean, listen, I think this is the product of a lot of things. I think it's the product of a conference that is not used to unity. And what I mean by that is, you know, this has always been a conference, the Big Ten I'm talking about, that prided itself on the idea that at least publicly, every vote was 14-0. Every decision was unanimous. Every president or chancellor was talked around to agreeing. Now, is that always true? Maybe not necessarily, but publicly that was the case. This is also a conference that hasn't weathered anything like this, certainly at least not since, what, probably World War II. And it's a conference that's got a first-year commissioner that didn't have a background in college athletics. And I think more pertinently, I would say, than not having a background in college athletics, because, you know, if Kevin Warren had come from the Horizon League, I don't know how much differently this would be going. But didn't have a background in the Big Ten and has, I think, been trying to build a lot of these relationships, you know, under very adverse circumstances. You know, it was not that long ago that he had made a pledge to attend at least one sporting event for each of the Big Ten's athletics programs, men's and women's, in his first year on the job. Well, obviously, I'm guessing that didn't actually get finished off before everything got shut down. So, you know, I think it's a product of a conference that, as much as anything else, doesn't really know what to do when things get dysfunctional. And again, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. I think the circumstances are beyond anyone's control. I think Kevin Warren's role in this is probably being sort of unfairly cast, considering, you know, he's just been handed a sinking ship and asked to get it across the Atlantic. You know, and you do have an element undeniably of sort of self, you know, self preservation right now within the conference because of everything that's going on financially and all that. But one way or another, it just feels like a conference that doesn't quite know what to do when not everyone is in kind of lockstep with everyone else.
And as we move forward on this, Kevin Warren has come out and said the decision for playing football in the fall is final, that it's not going to happen. So the next steps, we've had a week since we've talked. Has anything else been brewing in the world of football? Or when will be the next marker we need to look forward to? Is it when the college – is our college football this Saturday?
There's a college football game Saturday night. Central Arkansas, Austin Peay.
The fly's open. Let's go
Pee. Fly's open. Let's go Pee. I do not believe Fly Williams will be in attendance.
I don't think so. Well, he might be, but via Zoom, just like we and
everything
else.
If I'm not mistaken, well, I'll leave that for another day, just for legal purposes. But listen, I mean, I think that's...
Come on,
that's
let's get arrested. We can do it. Come on.
Yeah, you know, that's. I think that's kind of the next.
Is it going to be
yes? Fly Williams was arrested in New York 3 years ago and was alleged to be one of the chief architects of a large drug distribution ring. That's
really
what I thought, but I didn't want to say that out loud until I could find
That's not a different fly. That is the fly.
Streetball legend. This is from Washington Post, May 4, 2017. Streetball legend Fly Williams accused of running massive heroin distribution ring in Brooklyn.
Ouch.
So I don't think he will be at the game on Saturday night, which I believe is at Austin Peay for those who are
the governors.
Those who are concerned. That's the next step. And then I think from there, certainly seeing how the Power Five conferences that are still playing fair, you know, do games introduce a layer of uncertainty or lack of control in all this? What happens is maybe some of these campuses start to shut down. You know, does that change the calculus at all? Does that make it more likely that these games can happen? I mean, it's clear at this point that the three that are left are going to try, like really, really going to try, that they are not, you know, this was not some sort of show of face to wait a week and then say, well, you know, we saw some of the same data that the other conferences saw. We're convinced we're going to close it down. This is genuine. You know, hey, we're going to push ahead. Now, I'd point out that for the vast majority of SEC, ACC, and even to some extent Big 12 teams, it's not hard. It's not necessarily as big of a concern to be playing football in the winter, you know, in football in December, than it is for the Big Ten. And then when you know, somebody pointed this out to me about the Pac-12 the other day, they pointed out the Pac-12 has far more urban campuses than really any of the other conferences. You know, Washington is in an urban
Seattle, right?
Area, UCLA and USC, Stanford, you know, Cal Berkeley, Arizona State. You know, Tucson's not exactly small. University of Arizona, even Boulder is kind of an exurb of Denver these days. So the challenges for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten would have gone a little bit beyond simply just wanting to be out ahead of everyone else. But it's clear at this point these other conferences are very much going to try, and I think that's kind of going to be the next step to see whether or not it works.
Now, are they going to take any cue from what the NFL does, or is that a different horse of another color? The NFL is going to play in 2 weeks, and the Philadelphia Eagles today joined the club of NFL teams who are not going to allow fans in the stands. Is this just from your vantage point, is this just a college athletics issue only, or are they going to see how and if and when the NFL can work? Or do you say, well, they're paid athletes. These franchises have $1 trillion. This is different.
Well, I think that there are going to be some issues that are going to be different. For example, you don't have captive sort of populations right around, you know, college towns it's going to be a different animal, I would argue, to managing a crowd than downtown Indianapolis, for example. I think there has definitely been, throughout all of this, and Glass, you and I have talked about college sports, pro sports, the NFL, soccer, whatever, there's definitely been a bit of a monkey see, monkey do approach to a lot of the mechanics of this. English soccer wanted to see how German soccer did it and said, okay, well, that worked and that worked and that didn't and that didn't. If somebody else successfully brings fans back, then you will see a lot of people try to copy them, I would guess, in relatively short order. And obviously that will be dependent upon whether the sport is indoors or outdoors, what your capacity is, what kind of event you're putting on and on. But I think it's going to come down first to somebody being willing to kind of take that plunge. I know they're talking about doing it in Germany. England is introducing some trial runs at, I think, a number of different events. But it really is going to be something where I think a lot of people are going to say, well, we'll let someone else do it and then we'll see how it goes. And if their method works, then maybe we'll refine it a little bit, fit it, you know, retrofit it to what we need, then we'll do it. But if it doesn't work, then we let somebody else, you know, make the mistake on their dime and not ours, and we'll plow forward with no fans.
Well, that is definitely one way to look at it. And when we're in uncharted territory here, moving forward, the next angle for spring football, if that is going to be the case, we've heard so much, oh, I don't know, discourse and how these decisions have come to fruition already. Would we expect to hear more transparency, see more transparency? Well, heck, who doesn't want to play spring football? Is there going to be a task force? Is there going to be how? Where does the conference go from here? Or are they just going to come out one day and say, well, here's what we got together and decided, and we'd just like to let you know?
I think, I mean, it would be a lesson, frankly, not learned in my mind if there wasn't more transparency. And I think some of that comes in maybe being more open with schools. Certainly with the programs, because I think one of the more legitimate groups of people that seem to have, or one of the groups of people that seem to have more legitimate frustrations, let's say it that way, then, you know,
is it their job to appease them, though, or is it their job to appease them?
Yeah. But I think you do have to understand that these coaches have a lot of people to communicate with on the ground level. That, you know, Kevin Warren's not going to make a statement to every single Big Ten football player, coach, trainer, you know, water boy, manager, team doctor, whatever. It's up to the coaches and the ADs to be communicating more directly with those people. And so you need to get the people at the top end of the decision-making tree more information so that they can be more open with the people as it filters down into their own sort of branches, if you want to say. You know, I would argue being more open with the media, and, you know, maybe that manifests itself in not necessarily just laying out every single detail of every possible plan, but maybe that manifests itself in a little bit more access, you know, in terms of interviews. Maybe it manifests itself in just being willing to go on background a little bit more often. Because at the end of the day, you know, one of the most effective tools the Big Ten's going to have for communicating with its fans is going to be in the media. I'm not trying to toot my own horn. Please understand. It's just reality.
The other part of that is
follow reporters for information. They check their Twitter handles, their bylines on websites, you know, their social media channels, whatever. I just think it would be, again, I don't think that the Big Ten needs to drop the whole Bible as it's being written. Because, of course, clearly the conference is turning its attention to some sort of winter or early spring season. But I do think that it would be a lesson not learned, as I said, if there wasn't a little bit more sort of, you know, sort of point-to-point transparency as the Big Ten tries to get to a place where it feels comfortable playing football, let's say from, you know, early January on.
And the other thing about the Big Ten in transparency is, and you are obviously much more connected to this than most people, does anything ever leak out of the Big Ten office, or is everything going to be formal if there is any of this transparency. I just don't remember hearing rumblings out of the Big Ten. It just seems like from conference business. Is that off base?
No. I mean, listen.
I'm not asking you to reveal your sources here, but yeah.
About 10 years ago, when everyone was considering realignment, I think it was Teddy Greenstein from the Washington or from the Chicago Tribune had Jim Delaney at, I want to say, maybe a Big Ten coaches and ADs meeting out in Arizona. And he said he knew that there would be an in-person council presidents and chancellors meeting at the Big Ten offices in June. And he said, will there be any media availability at that? And Jim Delaney said, you bring the beers, we'll bring the brats. And I was one of about a dozen people that was sitting. And I, to this day, I don't know why I was there, because it was like me and the Chicago Tribune and USA Today and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Did
and
you
the
sneak
Columbus
in the back
Dispatch.
Door?
And I was working part-time for Inside the Hall and stringing for the Bloomington Herald Times to write a story that, by the way, the Herald Times, if anyone's listening, never paid me for. Not that I'm counting, but if Chris Corman, you're out there, I never got my $50. But all jokes aside, the Big Ten provided brats and chips, and Teddy Greenstein brought a cooler full of Leinenkugel. And there was a long on-the-record session in that meeting. And then, and I won't say what was said off the record, because it was off the record, also because I don't remember most of it now. But there was also a long off the record session with Jim Delaney. And I believe also, if my memory serves me, Luana K. Simon, who, of course, I think is known more widely for different reasons now, but at the time was the chairwoman of the Council of Presidents and Chancellors. She was the president at Michigan State.
She's now more famous for covering up the Larry Nasser situation in Michigan State.
Her involvement and everything that's happened more recently in East Lansing. But what my point in that sort of, you know, extended trip down memory lane is the Big Ten's done that before. And it's been able to sit down with, you know, reporters. And I know that's not doable now, but you can get Zooms together. You can do different things. You can, you know, tell your associate commissioners to make themselves more available, not to do anything and everything and spend all day, every day doing interviews, but to just be a little bit more accessible to the media, who then can be a little bit more informed and therefore potentially better contextualized or can better contextualize the Big Ten's point when things happen. You know, I mean, I've literally sat in those settings where the Big Ten has facilitated that sort of thing. And I think it's harder to do now in 2020, not even just because of COVID, but because of the way the media landscape's changed than it was perhaps in 2010. But nevertheless, you know, that's one way that you make sure that people, even if it's on background, even if it's off the record, that people understand, you know, here's how you got to this decision, here's how you came to this place, here's where you go next, all those different sorts of things. It's I think it's important.
And the other important part of it is it has to happen. If they go through an entire 12-month cycle without football, we've already seen Iowa lopping off varsity sports. They won't be surely the only place to do so. So the pressure to get spring football on a scale of 10, in your opinion, is it 11?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very high. I mean, it's going to be very difficult for a variety of reasons, but I think it is very high. You know, I guess I would rate it somewhere between a 7 and an 8, and the reason I would rate it a little bit lower is because it did seem like there were some programs that had reservations, at least public reservations about it. Now, was some of that legitimate versus was some of that politicking, trying to sort of force the Big Ten's hand to either hold on to or reinstate the fall season? I don't know. But it did seem like there was some hesitancy toward a spring season because of the demands you'd be putting on athletes' bodies and different things like that. But nevertheless, it's certainly one where I think everybody, as I've said before, when we've talked in about these storylines, everybody understands what's at stake. Everybody understands what everyone is losing by not playing games, by losing the football season. And everyone understands what will be completely lost if there's not a way to, you know, hold something resembling a season, let's say sometime early next year.
We'll take a quick timeout here in just a minute, but I wanted to get just tie up the football loose ends here. You wrote a story earlier in the week about the Big Ten's TV partners perhaps helping or lending a hand. They have to be just as I guess it's not the end of the world. These are huge corporations. But when they don't get a televised games, they're not making any money. So it is truly a TV partnership by getting those media rights, getting the games on the air. You asked the question, can they help? What was the answer to the question?
I think I got a little bit lost in that one. Sorry.
When you have you wrote the article earlier about could the Big Ten TV partners lend a hand? That's a question. What answer did you find?
Well, there's not a firm one in the sense that those TV executives aren't going to come out and say flatly. I think that's where I got confused between sort of the people I talked to were former media executives, people who'd worked high up in places like Fox Sports, CBS, ESPN. So they were people who could speak on it hypothetically and say, yeah, the sort of thing you're talking about makes sense. These relationships are strong. Everyone will want them to remain strong, yada, yada, yada. But the reality is no one will know for sure. It's impossible to say for sure. The Big Ten has always been very protective of information around its television deals. You know, we can make some rough estimates of conference distributions minus certain other revenues or expenses that might get you to a firm-ish number. I think Indiana's, you know, the amount of the Big Ten distribution Indiana got in fiscal year 2019 that was specific to television revenue is somewhere in the range of about $41 million, maybe 41 and a half, somewhere in that range. But the point is, everyone is pretty proprietary about this stuff, and I don't think you're going to see, you know, somebody from ESPN or somebody from Fox going on the radio and saying, yeah, you know, we're working on this. You know, we're openly going to discuss this. I think that's the kind of conversation that would only happen behind closed doors and would only be announced as productive if it ever actually was.
And that makes sense. Do the TV companies need these football games to happen, or can they survive without them?
I think they can certainly survive without them. I certainly think that they are a lot better off. Excuse me, I was yawning there. It's terrible radio.
I'm boring you to death.
I think they were a lot better off if they do happen, even if they happen in the spring, and maybe they don't have quite as much value from an ad dollars perspective or a subscription perspective in the spring, but they still are much more valuable, of course, than zero. The biggest piece of kind of the story was just painting the picture of this financial ecosystem that, basically requires everyone to work with one another and therefore puts everyone in a position where if they allow one of the other primary partners to fail, so you're talking about the conferences who provide the content, the networks who distribute the conferences' games, and the distributors that sell the subscription packages that include the networks. It does absolutely no one any good for that ecosystem, for basically other parts of that ecosystem to, you know, knowingly let the injured party weaken. Now, everybody's kind of hit by this, so it's not like there's one party that's just clean and free and at the top of the list. But I think that by the same token, everybody can kind of look at everybody else and say, hey, listen, you know, we find a way to help each other out now. We're all going to be in a much, much better place in a year or 2 years when we've kind of come to grips with this to be able to kind of go, you know, with one another, help each other out then, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And it's not an easy question. Just like everything else that we're dealing with in the COVID situation, there's no black and white answer. It seems like everything is nuanced to a degree. Before we take that break, I just had one more follow-up for you. Do you think it's more important for universities individually to secure their loans, or would you think this would be more encouraging if the Big Ten Conference was coming to the rescue? We're in uncharted territory here, so I know that's not the easiest one, but the conference could really show some, I don't know, leadership. What's the word I'm looking for? As opposed to letting all the states look for their own PPE. Oh wait, did I cross the streams there? Sorry.
I don't know if I have a great answer to that. I think, you know, there's probably, I'm guessing a finances expert could give you a more detailed answer than I could. I certainly think that, you know, centralized leadership is always going to be valuable in a time like this. So using the Pac-12 as an example, the Pac-12 uses the its remaining media rights deal as collateral to secure a loan program that would allow each of its member schools to withdraw as much as $83 million over the next year to kind of keep the, you know, keep the trains running on time, coming into, you know, hopefully an academic year 2021, 2022, where everyone kind of returns to normal. I think the Big Ten has always sort of, the Big Ten at times has been willing to let its schools kind of call their own shots. Now, that's been in situations that have not been nearly as grave as this one. Let's be really clear. But the Big Ten has been willing to do that in the past. And maybe the Big Ten would want more of a sort of, we don't want to do one size fits all. We want each institution to find what fits its needs best on their own. And we'll work with them, you know, behind the scenes to facilitate that somehow to make that happen. You know, I don't know, but I would be sort of, I would have a lot of time and a lot of praise for anyone who's worried about centralized leadership right now. I just think that's part of what gets us through all this.
Sounds good, my friend. We'll let you take a quick break. We will thank our sponsors and do a little bit of Network Indiana news when we come back with Zach Osterman. We'll talk some hoops. Indiana University basketball has a brand new assistant coach. I know you've talked to many who have worked with him in the past, so we'll get caught up with what's going on in the world of basketball. I asked Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, earlier today about when he thinks they'll, as you know, him and his crew every year for the last 20-something years, do the stats at the Maui Classic, the Maui Gym Classic there at the Lahaina Civic Center. He said he's hoping by mid-September, hopefully, to hear whether we're moving forward or not. And I know you've seen the Jeff Goodman Watch Stadium informal poll of over 250 athletic directors about what they think for basketball moving forward. So we'll shift from the pigskin to the pumpkin when we come back with Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. We'll do it after this quick timeout. All right, Terry Stultz will join us tomorrow. Big show Friday, happy hour. We haven't spoken to T since the Nate McMillan firing by the Pacers. We'll talk about the blue and the gold's direction moving forward. The they had six candidates at 3 o'clock yesterday. They had nine candidates at 5 o'clock. Oh, the Pacers. They're not going down the Colts route here, are they? Well, I don't know. We'll figure it out with Terry Stultz. Tomorrow, happy hour right here during this timeline. And don't forget tonight, Your Money with David Hayes in about 20 minutes. At 8 o'clock will be game two of the Reds and Brewers doubleheader from this afternoon. Wade Miley and his 9-something ERA will get the ball in game two. And we hope by then the Reds' bats are heating up and taking care of the Brewers on the field of play. Remember, Reds and Brewers did not play last night. The Brewers following the Bucks of Milwaukee. The two Milwaukee professional teams leading the way to protest, boycott, not play last evening to bring attention to the case of the murder in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that has captivated the nation. We will have high school football for you tomorrow. Our Chalk Talk presentation with Coach Brian Rosenberg and the Hall of Famer Joe Smith, 6:30, as they get you ready for Monrovia at Edgewood. The Bulldogs come to town. Edgewood, big second-half rally last week, 49-20 winners at Mitchell. Kick time, 7 o'clock with Joe and Dave Novak. We'll have all the stats and analysis for you. That'll be followed on Friday night, as traditionally done by Bob Lovell and Indiana Sports Talk. Reds return to the radio. Reds and Cubs, the great American ballpark on Sunday for a 1 o'clock start. Every Thursday, we check in with Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. He's been busy with nothing going on. You're still busy. The circadian rhythms of college athletics, which we don't even know if are going to get played in the Big Ten. Well, Indiana had big news, and I believe you told me last week that you'd be surprised if we got to Labor Day and Archie Miller had not completed his staff. He did earlier this week, and it's a familiar name to Archie and Sean Miller and the Miller folks, dating way back. Tell us who the new assistant coach is for Archie Miller and the Indiana Hoosiers.
Kenya Hunter, hired from UConn, a man who's also had stops at NC State, Georgetown, Nebraska, Xavier under Sean Miller, and as you alluded to there, just a deep, deep history with Archie Miller and his family, going all the way back, in fact, to when Kenya Hunter was Archie Miller's AAU coach. And then their time at NC State overlapped. I think Hunter was a director of operations type position while Miller was a player. Hunter also coached under Sean Miller for a couple of years at Xavier. He's got the profile, and we heard Tim Miles said this to me. Of course, Tim Miles, the former Nebraska coach who Hunter worked for 5 years in Lincoln. I believe Danny Hurley said this when he hired Hunter at UConn in 2018, both that they think this is a man that we'll be talking about as a head coach in the not very distant future. He's certainly got the profile for it. He's worked under Herb Sendek, Sean Miller, John Thompson III. You know, he's been in the Big Ten. He's been in the ACC, the old Big East, the new Big East. Now he's going to be at Indiana. It is a hire that makes sense in a lot of different ways. It seems to tick every box. And, of course, you can't know for certain whether or not it's going to work out. But it is a hire that makes all the sense in the world on paper at this point in time.
Now, the question I have for you is, and I don't know if this has been addressed, answered, or otherwise, I don't know how this game is played, because a lot of it is cloak and dagger. A lot of it is behind the scenes, because you don't want to, poach, for lack of a better word. But we did see a couple weeks ago that a Syracuse assistant came out, I believe that was at Syracuse.com, and said thanks, no thanks to Archie Miller. So was Kenya Hunter the first choice, or how did this all come together, for how you understand it?
He was one of the two names I heard. The other that you mentioned there, Alan Griffin. Those were the two names that I think had kind of been sort of, you know, most strongly linked to this opening kind of in the early days. And I know I'm not the only person. I think some others even kind of reported that. Griffin, you know, was open about basically declining and saying he was going to stay at Syracuse, his alma mater. Griffin had actually worked with Archie Miller for years at Dayton and then went back to his alma mater, Syracuse, when Miller took the IU job. But these were kind of the two names that I'd heard up front as being kind of the priority targets, if you want to say. And then from there were, I won't say other names because it would just kind of get into speculation, but from there, I think you would have seen Indiana, you know, possibly turn more toward coaches that currently in the Midwest. I do think that having an East Coast, you know, sort of recruiting base in this wasn't necessarily a deal breaker, but I think that when you look at the way that Tom Ostrom and Archie Miller have been able to recruit Indiana and the Midwest in these last 3 years, I think they certainly feel like they're very strong here. And it's worth pointing out Kenya Hunter, with 5 years at Nebraska, signed Nebraska Glenn Watson, a four-star point guard out of Chicago. You know, he's going to have the recruiting ties here in the Midwest as well. But I think there was also a desire, among other things, with this hire. I want to be really clear, this wasn't just a recruiting hire. But among other things with this hire, I think there was a desire to bring in someone who would have some of those East Coast ties that Bruiser Flint had. Of course, as a longtime coach at UMass and Drexel.
Why are those ties important?
Just because it...
More ground to cover?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you're going to want to be able to open doors. I mean, listen, Indiana has had success recruiting the East Coast. I mean, it has. Think about the last 20 years. Marshall Strickland and Victor Oladipo are from Maryland. Thomas Bryant is from New York. Noah Vonleh is from Boston. There's a freshman in this class, Jordan Geronimo, who played his prep school in New England, and he's from New Jersey. Indiana has had success bringing players, good players, players who wound up being key players during their careers, from the East Coast to Indiana. And you want to be able, not necessarily like you're just going to shift all of your recruiting attention out East and you're just going to forget about your own backyard, but you want to be able, when you see a player that plays in one of those really, really strong areas of the East Coast, be it, let's say, you know, the triangle in North Carolina, be it the DMV in Washington, D.C., be it the NIPSAC, the incredibly talent-rich, you know, sort of prep school system throughout New England. You want to be able to try and go get those players if you can, and have an opportunity to open those doors if you see a player you want. And again, the other thing I'd say too is Tom Ostrom, Archie Miller, they've, you know, they signed three straight Indy Star and Mr. Basketball. I forgive me, it's a Pavlovian thing, but it is our award, so that's the way I always write it. You know, they signed, you know, top 100 players from Ohio, from Minnesota, depending on what ranking you looked at. I think Jake Forrester was top 100 to top 150 out of Pennsylvania. They've had plenty of success recruiting the Midwest. It's not like you need to go find somebody else that's going to do that job for you. So when you're looking at a coach's profile and you're asking what you're going to look at a coach's profile and say, okay, how does he work with players? How does he build relationships? You know, what can he do for the synergy of the staff? Because that's obviously so important for a head coach and his three assistants to have. You know, what's his track record in development? What's he like scouting opponents? All those sorts of things. Well, one of the things you're going to ask is, what can he do on the recruiting trail? Because at the end of the day, you know, you can't have a situation where you have a coach who just doesn't recruit, just doesn't do any recruiting. That's basically just like having an empty hole in roster management and your staff. Well, Kenya Hunter is the kind of coach that can both fortify, you know, at least on paper, fortify what you can do, what your staff can do in your immediate footprint, Indiana and then the Midwest, and is also potentially going to be able to help expand your reach out to the East Coast as well.
And the other point of this, Zach Osterman's our guest. You know that voice by now. He's on with us every Thursday. The other point of this is also there won't be much of a bedding in process. Number one, as you mentioned, Kenya is familiar with the Big Ten. He's familiar with the league. He was in it until Tim Miles got let go. He's known, you've listed the timeline of knowing the Miller family. So it's really hit the ground running and go. Indiana's not going to miss a beat. That had to be part of this excitement.
Well, and particularly, I would say at this time in the calendar, you know, when Indiana had a spot to fill in its staff last year, that spot opened up in, I think, late June.
Mike Roberts,
of course,
right.
That was also under more normal circumstances in terms of calendars and timelines and everything that was going on around, you know, just the country at that time in college basketball. In this case, you knew that you were going to want that full staff back, you know, relatively soon, because players are back on campus now. We don't know when the season's going to start. We don't know if it's going to be delayed. We don't know if it's going to be reformatted. But if it's not, you know, we're only about a month away from the start of formal preseason practice. And in the meantime, I come back to something that Archie Miller said when we spoke to him a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, whenever that was, where he said, you know, one of the things that he and his staff have spent a lot of time on this summer is trying to figure out what questions they would never consider that they now have to anticipate because of everything that's happening. Well, you're going to want another, you know, another brain in that conversation and another voice in that room. So I think that there was a bit of a greater sense of urgency to get that spot filled this time around than last time, just because of timing and circumstances.
Interesting. And now from a coaching standpoint, what is it that you said he's just not a recruiter. He's also in the coaching business. What did Tim Miles have to say, toot the horn about for Coach Hunter? What's going to be his strength on the staff, do you believe?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It seems like, I mean, like his UConn bio, if you read that, really spends a lot of time touting the work he does with big men. With you know, going back to his days at Georgetown, working with players like Roy Hibbert and Greg Monroe. You know, I mean, having spoken even with Isaac Copeland, who he helped recruit, Kenya Hunter helped recruit to Georgetown, then Hunter left for Nebraska. Copeland eventually played a couple years at Georgetown, then transferred to Nebraska. You know, Copeland wasn't necessarily a true out-and-out big. He was a bigger player, but he wasn't a back-to-the-basket big necessarily. And he talked at length about just, you know, Hunter's ability to kind of help him identify strengths and weaknesses, work on things, polish things. You know, it remains to be seen if Indiana will sort of formalize and say, well, you know, here's the big man's coach, here's the guards coach, here's the defense coach, whatever. But I've always said, you know, it's being an assistant coach in a college basketball program, I think it's very hard to just sort of pigeonhole, because you want those coaches to have relationships with everyone, such that, you know, hey, coach, can you hang around while I get shots up after practice? Or, you know, can you help me fix something in my mechanics or whatever it is? You're going to want your team, even if there's maybe one guy that's supposed to handle that above all others, you're going to want your players to have the relationships with just about everybody. Because what happens if one guy's on a recruiting trip, or, you know, has to spend a little bit of extra time in film because he's got the scout for the next game, something like that. So we'll see if there's kind of a formalized, okay, this is the position group, quote unquote, that Kenya Hunter is going to be coaching. But I don't know if it, you know, I would caution people against thinking that sort of ring fences them into just one thing.
Interesting. And as we move forward, the calendar for basketball season is still up in the air. I believe Dave Gavitt tweeted out last week at some point, hey, middle of September, we'll reevaluate and take a look. Your cohort in the world of journalism, Jeff Goodman, took a survey of a bunch of athletic directors at the Division I level. Did you have a chance to read Jeff's column about his thoughts on that?
I think I missed that. Sorry, Jeff.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is it was off the record, so he's trying to get as honest answers as possible. So the one that jumped out was, it was almost like multiple choice in a survey. He asked, you know, when do you think this is there going to be a season? If so, when so? And the greatest majority of responses, he had it split two ways. He called it the Power Six. He added the Big East for basketball, obviously, to the Power Five, and then the rest of them, about when basketball is going to be played. And the question I'll pose to you was, the anonymous athletic directors from the Power Six, 41% of these four choices, 41% of January or later was the most popular choice. Has that been what you have felt and heard from others, or do we really need to get football worked out first before we can worry about the hoops part of things?
You know, so your second question first, I think we're past the point of worrying about football first, just because we know that for the schools that aren't playing fall football, they won't be playing fall football for, you know, I mean, until sometime in the new year. And I would be surprised at this point, though. Perhaps nothing should be surprising in 2020, but I would be a little bit surprised at this point if they, going into 2021, is it? Yes, 2021 is the next. Good Lord, my brain. I'm going to be leaving my brain in 2020. I would be surprised if, like, Big Ten football's kicking off on January 1, 2021. So I think we're past the point of worrying just about football and, hey, we'll figure out basketball when it's time. I think it's time now. I've heard a range of things. I think there was a report out from John Rothstein just either yesterday or today suggesting that the likeliest target start dates for a season would be either, I think, right around Thanksgiving or, like, December 4th, December 6th, I'm guessing. That's like a Tuesday, similar to when the season is normally allowed to start. I would say that it seems like I don't want to mischaracterize it, like I've done as much legwork as, for example, Jeff has. I have gotten a lot of buzz around a sort of Thanksgiving-ish start. But I also think that the idea of a conference-only season that starts after the new year is one that a lot of people would seem very comfortable with. So at this point, the thing I would say seems least likely to me is that it starts on time. The vibe I've been getting has been more than anything, you know, potentially at least around Thanksgiving, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's January 1 or January 2, whatever it is. I wouldn't be surprised if we're just talking about, you know, 20 game conference only schedules starting January 1, maybe 26 games. And then we push the NCAA tournament back a little bit, hoping that maybe we get a little bit of good vaccine news going into the spring. I don't know. I think that there are going to be a lot of dates put on the table for now, because college basketball can't make the same mistake college football did and just sort of wait for this to resolve itself, you know, kind of on its own.
Well, and that's the issue in the college NCAA, and their tournament is run completely different than football. That money is theirs, and they need to find a way to get basketball being played, or they can't go another year without that payoff, $600 million. Ain't going to happen. Great job as always, my friend. We get smarter every Thursday when we listen to you, and we really appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. As always, Glass.